Do you really understand what the challenges of that person is? Do you really understand what it is that they're facing in their work life, in their home life? Do you know what their aspirations are? These things are difficult to understand, but there's a process that you can go through to gain that information, to harvest that information. To supercharge your business, you need the tools, skills, and confidence to get customers to desire what you do. This is the place you'll come to listen to advice and debate on business and marketing, tackling the biggest challenges and unlocking the biggest wins. I'm Simon McMahon. Welcome to the Content in Business podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. And today we're talking about understanding your audience, and not just on a surface level, not just gender, occupation, location, but actually what makes your audience tick. What are the challenges they're facing? How can you address their issues? And why is that important? Well, you're just the guide in your relationship with your audience. They're the hero, not you. You're not the hero. You're not the center of attention here. They are. And so it's really important that you understand what their challenges are, what their problems are, so that you can guide them and support them to their journey of achieving what they desire or what they need by using your product or service. It's too easy to get tricked into telling your own story and throwing it out there and, whoever picks it up. No, you really need to tailor your message and you really need to understand who you're speaking to. So we're going to dive in to some of the ins and outs about how and why it's important and how you can go about understanding. If you understand who your audience are and what their challenges are and what their desires are, then you can adjust your product and service so that it is better suited to what they need. So you can tailor and tweak your messaging, your features within your product or service to their needs. You can understand what they like and what they don't like about what you offer. You can serve the customer better. You can address their issues when they contact you or when they're dealing with sales or customer support. Or where they're just using it, if it's an online service or something like that, the messaging that you're putting in your system, if it's a system that they use, or even the messaging on your website, the sales messaging, can all be really dialed in and tailored to their personality, their way of speaking, even their language, if you're a worldwide product, just knowing exactly the nuances of languages between countries. Over in Asia and places like that, where there are different dialects, there's different sub-languages within one nation. Understanding that is really important. It's fun with Si and Rob time again. And we're playing What Came First again. I nearly forgot the name of the game then. We're playing What Came First again because we played it a few weeks ago and it was quite fun. And I thought, it's always learning.
And there's a lot of cards to get through. Shame. There's so many cards.
You know, that's one stack of cards. There's actually another stack. But I've been shuffled a few times. So I need to make sure that I'll need to sense check to make sure I've not done the cards before.
Okay. I'm going to go straight in. And this is a question for you. Okay. So for the camera, I'm not sure if you can see that. So what came first, Texas or Mexico?
What came first, Texas or Mexico?
That's a strange question. A state in a country versus a country. That seems like nuts.
Yeah, but was it the modern day Mexico? I don't think it was. Wasn't it like, because the Aztecs were there and things like that. So I wonder if it's Mexico is later than Texas. I'm going to go, what came first? Yeah. So Texas.
You're right. Texas did come first. It says the lone state gained its independence from Mexico on March the 2nd, 1836. Mexico was not internationally recognized as a country independent from Spain until December the 28th, 1836.
Of course, yes, because it was ruled by the Spanish.
I would have had no clue.
There you go. To be honest, that my knowledge of all that is quite sketchy.
My North American history and stuff is not great.
This is a good one. Right. Candy Crush Saga or Angry Birds? What came first?
Now, I think these are really close together. And the reason I know is when I first started dating my wife, Jenny, this just shows how much our lives have changed. Before children, obviously, we'd just start dating. We would often, you know, we'd go out for drinks and stuff on a Saturday night, but we would sit up in bed playing either or. We'd sit there just playing Angry Birds and stuff, just in bed, just chilling in the morning with a cup of tea. And we pretty much would play both. But I think Candy Crush came slightly after, just because I remember playing Angry Birds first. So I'm going to go for Angry Birds came first.
It did. Yeah, before I read the fact, I just remember Angry Birds being really one of the first big mobile games. Mm. And I think also Candy Crush, I remember reading something that it's actually an amalgamation of a lot of other games, okay, or like inspired by a lot of other games, and just kind of skinned with a certain style. But in 2009, the world became addicted to catapulting birds at pigs. In 2012, they became even more addicted to Candy Crush Saga, which has been downloaded almost 3 billion times.
It's nuts, isn't it? I think with those questions, they're easier because you can picture where you were playing the game. Mm. Like I was in Manchester with Jenny for one. I remember being in my house in Kenilworth playing Candy Crush, which came after. So that was a bit easier.
Mm.
There you go.
There we go. Always good to learn a little fun fact. That's a bit of trivia for everyone.
It's always fun with Cy and Rob.
Fun with Cy and Rob.
Let's get that written on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Forget content in business t-shirts. No. We get Fun with Cy and Rob t-shirts.
All right.
One of the big mistakes that loads of companies do is they use lazy demographics. So they're saying, okay, our typical customer is a female who is married with kids and they live in London and they work in a finance firm. That is a great start. But do you really understand what the challenges of that person is? Do you really understand what it is that they're facing in their work life, in their home life? Do you know what their aspirations are? These things are difficult to understand, but there's a process that you can go through to gain that information, to harvest that information. So instead, get specific. In addition to their occupation, well, what does their job consist of? What level does this person work at in the business that they work? Where does your product or service fit into their work life? Because if it's something that's a real, you know, a supporting product for hands-on tasks, that's different to someone who's very hands-off, kind of consultation role. What is their typical career path and how can you help them achieve that goal? It's absolutely fine to say, we do this software product for finance, doing accounts or running payroll or something. But actually, what are the headaches that these people have with other softwares or in addition to that software? Is there something that you can bolt in or develop to help them even more? Getting close to the audience means that you can start to innovate, you can start to customize, and you can start to add in extra features and benefits into your product or service. Think more about their location as well. It's not just, do they live in the city? What kind of property do they live in the city? You know, are they on a really tight budget? Does their situation allow them to be extravagant with their spend? If you're something like a luxury brand, you have to know this and you have to know who these people are that you're targeting and what their ability is to purchase your product, or whether it's just something that it's not even worth speaking to a certain level of the market because they just don't have the expendable income to buy your product. Again, it's very, very easy to create a brand and create a product and put it out there at a rough demographic and see who picks it up. There might be a level of testing in the early days. There might be a test in the market, getting some information, but that's usually done better by surveys and other data gathering tools, which we'll come on to later, than putting the product out there and seeing what happens. And we've got to think about gender. In recent years, gender is so much more fluid. Males are buying female products are buying male products, and anywhere in between. It's not just a man and a woman anymore. This is a more fluid space. And so you need to consider that as well. One of the things that I've noticed as you walk into somewhere like Superdrug and you look at the cosmetics, you can see the imagery now is much more fluid. It's not just all women. There are men in there as well. There are a mix of races. There are a mix of genders. Everyone is accounted for and everyone is included. So you need to be inclusive with your brand, but you also need to be targeted and completely understanding of who the people are within that range of identifiers and races and genders and demographics and locations and work occupations. And you need to make sure that you're completely clear who those people are so that you can tailor your message specifically to certain people within a range of customers that you might have. So understanding your target audience and identifying those individuals and those types of individuals is really, really important. But then what about communicating with them? Like we've talked about before, their challenges that they have on a daily basis, often they are tied back to an emotional trigger. How can you make life better for people? Or how can you make their work less of a headache? How can you deal with their hair that they really struggle with because it's super frizzy and your product fixes that? The benefit is that the hair is under control. But what's the emotional benefit there? So I spoke to Rob Lyon, CEO of Playfair, to give us a bit of insight on that.
I think when it comes to emotion, I've got one example that I think really rings true with one of our clients. So we have a client who sells this really innovative small fire extinguisher, and you think it would be about putting out fires. That's the obvious thing. But actually, emotionally, more people buy that product to protect someone else. We often think of their customer, what I would call like a sandwich generation. So actually the person who resonates with that product most, and that's the customer they need to understand, is the one that's trying to protect potentially a younger child in the household. So maybe a son or daughter who's going to university, or potentially they've also got that elderly parent who's starting to be less mobile, maybe less cognitive, and they might have a few more challenges. So your first point would be thinking about that. You very instinctively go for who needs to put out lots of fires. But actually, no, that isn't the place at all. It's emotionally who feels the need to have something just in case. And that is the emotional difference.
Peace of mind.
Exactly. And that's exactly what you're selling. You're not selling a fire extinguisher. You're selling peace of mind. And you need to be able to latch onto the emotions of your customer to understand what creatives then would resonate them. Showing it, putting out lots of fires, great. You need to demonstrate the product works. But actually show the peace of mind, the comfort, the solidarity as a family with the product in the background, because actually it's peace of mind you're selling, not the need to put out a fire.
Actually, it goes even further with a product like that, is you actually don't want to use it. So you absolutely are selling a product that actually might not ever get used. Yeah. It is purely based on an emotional benefit. Actually, that's what people want. They buy that product, they don't want to have to use it.
It's really interesting that the success it's had, because we've really focused on that. One of the sort of strap lines, if you like, we've used historically is just in case. You know, just in case. There are very few products you buy hoping never to use. Mm. But yeah, what they're buying is peace of mind, and that just in case, the ability to sleep at night knowing that it's there. I've actually got my wife's uncle is sadly having a bit of a decline in terms of dementia and things, and I had some in my garage from a photo shoot we did, and I took two with me because I thought, actually, I left. It was quite an emotionally draining day, but I left with a slight peace of mind to know if they forgot and they left the gas on, or I had to make sure the carer knew what they were and so on and so on. But actually, I left with more peace of mind, and that was very, really clear to me. I wasn't trying to put out fires for them. I was trying to, it was myself almost. I was the emotional driver, and it wasn't how it helped them, how it helped me. And that's a really interesting driver in terms of understanding the emotion of your customer.
And I think what you're saying there is, well, again, it works on two levels in terms of there is the emotion that someone feels when they buy the product. And there's also, but there's another level, which is also the emotion that someone feels when they use the product as well.
Absolutely.
And I guess with that case, say if someone is called to action and has to use the fire extinguisher, if they have a fire in their home, then you've got a completely different emotion, haven't you? You're selling kind of relief and, you know, that avoidance in their mind of what could have gone wrong.
Yeah, and equally, there's a whole piece about, you know, there will always be naysayers with products. So you've got to think about the emotion of the who you're trying to convince. Do you want to be trying to find somebody that needs convincing? Or is actually there will be a demographic of person who's very open-minded and isn't going to be scrutinizing details, and actually they appreciate the bigger picture of a product. There will always be a customer, you know, that, or if, you know, if you think about personas, some people want to know the certifications and the nuts and bolts, and that's something you latch onto. The customer you really want that's going to buy into your brand to be a long-term, you know, advocate for your business is the ones that latch onto you emotionally. But your marketing has to bring them on that journey. And without that, you're just going to become very transactional as a business.
When you're drilling down into understanding that customer and that target audience of yours, you can get super, super granular. I've already talked about finding ways of understanding their emotions and their challenges, and the finer details of occupations, where they live, those kind of things. You can take it to an extreme level where you can actually create like avatars or personas, you know, where you create, you know, Meg the marketer or something like that. And she lives in this house, and this is her income, and this is how many children she's got, and a pet, and actually create a person, like a character. I don't know whether that is maybe taking it a bit too far. I think my fear with using avatars and personas, I know it's talked about an awful lot, and I'll certainly get some backlash on this, maybe from you. I think my concern about taking it too far is you're potentially then starting to limit your target audience, and you're starting to get kind of a stereotype in your mind. And what's your take on avatars and personas?
I feel that they have a place, but I feel more so they had a place. I think historically, this is even going back into my career, there's a time when we didn't know who the customer was, because you were putting a product on a shelf in B&Q, for example. You didn't know who was pulling it off the other end. You didn't know who was using your product. You didn't have any data. So back then you kind of had to do bits of market research and try and create a picture of who you think your customer was. Even though you could be selling tens of thousands of units, you wouldn't know who was buying it, because there was that real detachment. At that point, I feel that you did need to help yourself almost by creating this character. But today you have that data. You should know, shouldn't have one persona. You should probably have 20. And it was very necessary then when you would be creating, say, one TV advert, for example. You needed to know who you were selling to. But as you know today, you should have 10, 20, 30 ad creatives to cater for all your audiences, not just the one. The other place where I think it can work is for other people in your organization. So if you're in a marketing meeting, and I do always, you know, being in plenty of them myself, feel for marketeers when they're in sort of board level moments, because there will be financial people and ops people and HR people and CEOs, and sometimes it really helps them understand who you're talking to. So sometimes it's less for you in terms of creating your campaigns. Sometimes it helps the wider organization. And even if you bring in new people into your business, say even into the marketing department, I suppose, if you had, say, new graphic designers, you could very quickly bring them up to speed of who they're trying to talk to without them having to start from scratch. There's a place for it. But I do think people can waste a lot of time creating a persona when they really just need to look into their data. And they should be talking to their customers all the time. There's no excuse now to create who you think your customer is. You should know exactly who they are and the nuances of who they are, and how you cater for each of them differently.
So you could, what you're saying there is you could almost create a persona almost as a starting point for others to give an impression, like painting a picture almost.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think today, you should know who your customers are. You should be talking to them. You shouldn't have to rely on what you think there and create your own picture. It's there right in front of you. So build who your customer actually is rather than who you think they could be.
Rob talked there about data. And obviously data in the modern day is so, so important. There's loads of data that you can pull from. You can look into existing sales. You can look into existing studies. You can do all sorts of methods of harvesting opinions and feedback and just general knowledge from studies, surveys, just conversations. Think about your existing customers, for example. You can speak to them and ask them, well, why do you work with us? Or why do you buy what we offer? What makes us great? What makes us not so great? If we didn't exist, what would you have done? So if you're providing a service, well, what would the client have done if you weren't available? Would they have just chosen another service provider? Or would they actually have had to go through this whole process of choosing someone else or had some much worse experience with a different supplier? Those kind of answers are really, really important in terms of shaping your offering to them and shaping your key messaging. If not using you makes their life so much more difficult, that's a real selling point for your business. And it's the same with current leads as well. Part of the conversation when you're talking to prospects is learning from them, not just what they need right now in terms of the negotiations, but actually, what are the issues that they're facing? Why are they talking to you in the first place? What's driven them to have this conversation with you? And again, that's not just on a general, well, I needed this solution level, but it's also on, well, I'm speaking to you because what you said about X caught my eye. This tagline that you used or this mention of a certain feature or benefit, that was the thing that pulled me in. That's an absolute huge unlock for you to be able to shape your messaging, to you be able to lean into what you know works and cut out what doesn't really get looked at too much and refine your communication with leads and with customers. And of course, there's the competition. Look at your competitors. Look at the people that are in your space. What are they saying? What are they doing? How are they growing their business? What are the messages that they're putting out there that you think that people are resonating with? Who are the kind of customers that you can find out, you know, what kind of businesses or what size of businesses that a competitor seems to do well with? And then work out the difference between you and your competitor and say, well, are you a smaller business? Are you a bigger business? Are you more customized? Are you more generic? And does that resonate with a different kind of audience? That's a real, again, another real unlock for customizing and defining and separating you from competition and from other businesses, but actually really dialing in to the customer that you're trying to obtain. And then finally, ask your colleagues, ask connections on social media, ask followers, using surveys, using polls, even speak to friends and family. Sometimes you don't get all the most biased answer, but it all helps. And I've mentioned running surveys a couple of times now. You can still use loads of free tools on the internet to run surveys and polls and get opinions from people. Just make it worth their while. Offer an incentive, offer some kind of discount, offer a free consultation. You'd be surprised how many people will respond, or just sometimes make it enticing with the imagery or the communication or the copy that you're using. I know for a fact that LinkedIn polls work really, really well because it stands out in the feed and the people are scrolling through and a poll comes up and there's something about a few buttons that just makes people want to press them. So that data is really easy to access. What's a bit harder to access is some of the data that you might get through ad platforms and social media just through to some of the restrictions and some of the new changes that are coming through in terms of platforms and phones, tracking limitations, cookie blocking and things like that. So I spoke to Rob again to see what his views on that was.
I guess with the issues of, you know, the world is very different since the, you know, cookies and, you know, your that first party data bit is really difficult. I think one thing you've got to remember now, but the platforms still know who your customers are. Mm. So despite you not having the data, the platforms know. So you need to think about your metrics slightly differently. So as an example of TikTok, say, for example, you need to know it's important that people like and save your videos, but watch time is the really key metric. So your audience will be seeing your content, but how engaged are they throughout the length of your video? I mean, that's one key metric. Because, you know, as TikTok as a platform, it will start by showing, it will show people that follow you, first of all, a piece of your content, and it will test it on them first. If they engage with it, it will then show people similar to your customers, and then it will show the wider audience. So you could spend a lot of time worrying about who you're targeting, but the platforms know. Put more effort really into the content itself, that it will be really engaged, it'll have the right hooks, it will entertain. Because almost the worry about who your customers are is being taken away. It's frustrating in one sense that you don't have that visibility, but the platforms know. So actually put all that effort into the creative. And similarly, you know, there are times where you can find out who your customers are very specifically by, you know, even in a different world, say in, and we're going through a recruitment process at the moment. So you receive CV after CV after CV. And that's almost the equivalent of the data that you used to get in advertising terms. I know who they are, I know their age, I know their email address, I know all those things. But actually by finding that person on LinkedIn and then maybe equivalently, you know, see who they are on Facebook, you get a much better view of that person. You'll see the real them. So you could have videographer Kevin from Wolverhampton as an example. And I know exactly everything about him in terms of the data I would have had in advertising land, but in this instance, I have it in terms of a job application, a CV. But I will learn more from finding him on Facebook and seeing that he has a wife, he likes to holiday in the UK, he has a dog, you know, clearly he likes to spend time with his family. You get a much better view of the person. So you do have the ability to find, you know who your customers are today. Go and find a few of them online and just see who they are in real terms. And you might start to build a better picture.
So anyway, there's a couple of things that you said there. I think that the first thing, obviously, you were talking about TikTok, you're talking about things like watch times. Mm. And obviously, there's a lot of metrics that we can get on our own content through social media, analytics and insights in terms of things like likes and shares and comments and those kind of things. But you were talking very specifically about watch time there. What do we think these days about things like, you know, the whole vanity metrics thing, like the likes and shares and that? Are they still important, or is it more about things like, well, actually, what's the real engagement?
Reach is a tough one, because it can be quite a fake metric, because even with your advertising, you can choose to show it to lots of people, and are they the right people? Reach is one I always think is in PR land. I've worked with PR agencies, some really good ones, some not so good. And the ones that lean into that, all they anchor on is to reach. You know, you can target certain publications, certain news broadcasting things that give you that, but is it valuable? That's why I really like things like watch time, because you know someone's been engaged in your content. You could reach 5 million people. If 4.9 million don't make it past 2 seconds, what's the point of the reach?
Mm.
And I think that's where you can really learn if people are truly engaged. I mean, could you call it a hack? I suppose you could. If you've got a really great piece of content, cut it in half. So you have part one. If people make it to the end of part one, I can be damn sure that they're going to find out what happened in part two. So they'll then have to click on your profile, find your videos, find part two. And all the while, you've now gained them as a follower. They absolutely will see your next piece of content. So that's why I like things like watch time. It's why the likes of Mr. Beast on YouTube, that's why he wins, because he looks at how he keeps people engaged throughout his entire process. Mm. He could just concentrate on getting more and more and more and more people to see his content, but he knows what really matters to the platforms and to him is, are people engaged and are they really absorbing what he's trying to do and enjoying the content?
Mm. And the other point you made is just around that kind of, I suppose it's almost like manual scrubbing of individuals, even with things like first party data, focusing on that and moving away from some of the original tracking and insights and analytics, you know, really detailed. Mm-hmm. Like, this person that follows you likes this, and they don't detail that level anymore on places like Meta or Facebook and Instagram. But actually, if you put a post out there and people like it, you can see who's liked that. But you can still manually go in and actually click on who these people are, can't you?
Absolutely. We put lots of time into community management and community engagement. If someone's taken the time to comment on your post and say they like something, well, reach out to that person, thank them because they've given you the time. But you could very, very quickly have a little glance at who that person actually is.
Yeah.
And equally, you'll have naysayers and you'll have people that don't like your product and they'll tell you in the comments, find out who they are too. You probably will really start to build pictures of where the objections are to the product. And it may be just you're not servicing that customer properly with information. It's often people who don't believe it can do what you're saying it can do. Well, that customer just needs you to physically show them what it does. Whereas somebody who has used it and it's worked, clearly they don't ever need that metric again because they appreciate and trust the product. So there are ways where you can engage with your audience and build that picture yourself and not rely purely on data.
That's, what you say there really ties into something that I was saying earlier around the point of really understanding your audience isn't just to focus on what they like about you. It is also to focus on what they dislike about you and either make it better or actually find out the people that aren't your audience as well as the people that are.
Yeah, completely.
So why do all this? As I've said at points throughout the show, it's all about refining your offering and how you communicate that offering to your customers and your potential clients. Understanding exactly who they are, what their challenges are, what their situation in life is, lets you refine what you say to them that will really resonate. And it also lets you refine what you don't need to say or who you don't need to speak to. And so you can be more efficient with the way that you present yourself and the way you communicate your message. Let's take this podcast, for example. This is a podcast that is designed for brand owners and business leaders, and it focuses mainly on growing your brand, using marketing, using personal traits, productivity traits, courage and general conduct to run an efficient business and communicate yourself in the best way and find clients. And a big part of the definition of this podcast was based on research. What do we feel that the customers need? And you go on a journey and you refine that, and you've got to start somewhere. But keep learning, keep finding out that information and understanding that audience so that you can really create better content, better products, and better services. And understanding who I'm speaking to shapes the content that I create. I've talked about the kind of things we do, but I can get deep into the various topics knowing that these are issues that business owners and brand owners and leaders within businesses are facing. I can address those issues because I'm learning, I'm getting the feedback, and I'm asking the questions to make sure that the advice that we provide on this show is helpful to people. It helps you set a tone. It helps you resonate and connect with your audience. What is your tone like when you speak to people? And that is through your sales, that is through your advertising, that is through the messaging on your website. Or if it's content like this, it's the way that you present yourself. Do you use comedic content? Do you have fun with it? Is it a very serious subject? Does it need to be short, long, snappy, drawn out, detailed, high level? Focusing on the tone of the content, obviously, it helps you speak to someone better. If you know a family member or a friend and you know their personality, you know you speak to people in different ways. And it's the same, obviously, in our business relationships, and it's the same with your potential clients and your existing clients. So define your audience, get deep, get a full understanding, and remember, connect with people on an emotional level. It's way too easy to get drawn up in features and benefits and what makes you great. You need to focus on how you can make your customer great. And that is through emotion, and that is through understanding. So I hope this show has been useful and helpful for you. Keep subscribed, keep following us, keep up to date, engage with us, ask questions. I'm really, really keen to address your issues. Like I say, we learn who your audience is, and I'm learning who you are every time I put something out. Thank you again to Rob for joining us, and I'll see you in the next one.